As always, appreciate it, Steve. Thanks.
All right. I was telling people earlier that I went down to get the media meal in a box. Nice box, though. And that meant you had to go outside the press box to get it. It was awful.
Yeah.
So, in the conditions, based on the plan Penn State put together, how did the plan fit the conditions?
It was awful in the press box, too. There was a door open to the press box. I was like, can you please close it? Because it's miserable inside. So I can even imagine how bad it was outside. I don't know. Sometimes that kind of stuff doesn't come across on TV well. And because it wasn't raining, because at least it had stopped raining kind of maybe in that first half. Like, people, you know, get the sense that it's really not that bad. I saw the producer before I came on. There was an American flag in that one end zone that just did not stop whipping the entire game.
It was starched.
So, yeah, it really was. So I remember after the game, Sean Clifford said, you know, there were times where the wind would die down and we could throw, and there were other times when I had trouble handling a snap. So it moved in waves for the game, too. So I think under those circumstance and situations, when you have a team that's turning the ball over as much as Penn State has this season, and you want to mitigate that in wind and, you know, in tough conditions, and you saw Devin Ford have trouble with the opening kickoff on a wet football.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, why take the risk? Yeah, it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't the most creative offensive show, but it was a game plan that worked.
Exactly. And I think that if you're there, you understood why you had to go about your business the way you did, because Jack Ham and I made a big deal on every kick as to which direction the wind was. And, you know, there was one, there was a punt, for example, I think that Dotson let skip by and go to the two. That was the one that went to the 2 yard line. But there's no way he can feel that punt, Mark, because of the conditions.
I remember watching him on that punt. He looked absolutely confident that was going into the end zone. He just didn't, it did not appear even to faze him. And then I think he probably turned around and went, oh, wait, what? What just happened? In the other side, the other end of the field, I mean, you could just see him trying to field punts, and, you know, he had to do it a lot. He just, you know, his feet were constantly moving, and, you know, he just didn't, he did not look comfortable doing that. So I got the sense of some of the discussion in the press boxes, you know, why is Will Levis running 17 times? Well, you know. And, you know, time, date, and place, I kind of got it there, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. Then there's the defense. I thought the sequence that told me everything about Penn State's defensive performance was the one where Penn State did turn it over on the plus side of the field, and then three plays later, Rutgers was punting from its side of the field. I thought that was about the way they played defense most of the day.
Yeah, and did they not lose yardage? If I remember correctly, they ended up losing yardage on that series.
Yeah, the whole series. That's why they were punting, punting from their own side of the field.
Right. Yeah. I thought, you know, the Rutgers going for it the first time. I thought Rutgers, you know, maybe, you know, this is probably a good smart move for them. They've been pretty creative, and Langen didn't know where to go on that the very first one. I think it was Mustafa maybe on the stop.
Yeah.
You know, but they're inside. The defensive tackles like that did a nice job. The second time, I thought, well, you saw what happened the first time, and it didn't go well for you, and so I tried to throw out of it, and you know, Brandon Smith was all over Langen on that play. You know, he was fortunate to get away with having a receiver kind of, you know, mingling in the area of where he threw the ball. I thought that was their better, probably their best defensive game of the year, and I got a response from people, look, it was Rutgers. I was like, yeah, look, it was Rutgers. You know, that's averaging 17 more points a game than they were last year. I mean, this is not this season to Saturday. This is not the Rutgers offense that we had seen last year. They were kind of high flying. I mean, they're putting up 30 a game. They put up, you know, big numbers, you know, 37, I guess, against Purdue at a nice, you know, comeback day. You know, put up points against Ohio State. And they shut them down pretty much everywhere. Right? Even the touchdown. The kind of that crossbody. I thought that was a ball that could have been batted down in the end zone. That was just a 50-50 ball that they came up with. That really, you know, it was that close to being a shutout.
And, yeah, not only that, I don't think people realize that the team that actually held them to their lowest point total all year had been Illinois with 20. Mm-hmm. So that's the lowest point total they'd given that they'd scored all year was 20. Now they lost that game 23-20. But, I mean, even as you mentioned against Ohio State, they scored points. That Saturday, they really weren't, except for that one drive on the short field, they weren't close to scoring points.
Yeah, not on the 12 first downs, about 200 yards of offense. They weren't going anywhere. So I think, you know, as once you got into the second half, the condition, it was still windy, even though it was, you know, the sun was kind of peeking out, it was still windy.
Yeah.
And, I thought it made sense, James Franklin, afterwards, saying it without saying it. So, look, we, you know, he really didn't say this, but I'm sure he was thinking we did not think our defense was really going to be in a position to give up three scores and really kind of let them into the game. So if we're just going to play station to station and protect the football, which is, you know, I keep going back to that, but I think you've mentioned on your show before too, that's been an overwhelming factor of those first five games. And Penn State is still, even at this point, I think they're still last in the Big Ten in turnover margin.
Minus nine. Yeah.
I believe they're tied with Michigan State coming up this week. And Indiana, I just looked earlier today, Indiana's at plus 10. You know, the disparity is huge. So when you have an offense that start winging the ball around and trying stuff and getting a little loose with it, that's when you would give Rutgers opportunities, and they did. You know, they did with the fumble, the fumble that did it. So
yeah, it's not just minus nine giveaway takeaway. You're minus 39 points off takeaways. 58 for the opponent, and 19 for you. So you're minus 39. And you look at what's Penn State minus for the season in terms of total points. It's probably pretty close to that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so that's a big part of it. What did you think of the three running backs? I mean, Holmes was late, but Lee and Ford, how well do they work with that offensive line? And what did you think of the tight ends?
Some of the tight end blind, that's something that I just don't notice that often. But this game, I really did. I thought Johnson and Strange, you'd see him out front and go, okay, that was kind of a nice tight end block on that run. Hey, there's another nice tight end block on that run.
Yeah.
It looked like Lee, you know, they were getting out of the backfield so that they were actually getting into a spot where they could make some of their moves and do some of the things. Lee continued that, you know, backed up at the 2-yard line. That's a situation where you're in a bit of a bind. You know, they're late in the game. Maybe you get a flip. You know, that's a situation where you're probably thinking, we don't want to do anything stupid and let Rutgers back, you know, into swinging distance. And he, you know, he just bailed him out right away with one of his better runs of the season. I thought that 31-yard, it was a really nice run down the sideline. He put a lot of moves together. And Devin Ford, you know, coming out of a family tragedy and missing last week's game, it looked like he was running with a lot of purpose, too. I think, you know, what they've had to do with that backfield just week to week to week this season, I think they're going to come out of it with still more questions than they would have, you know, anticipated.
Yeah.
You know, depending on, you know, Noah Cain and how he's able to rebound from next year, but you're coming out of it again. I think you like the four guys you're going to come back with next year.
You talked about the quarterback runs, Mark. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Sean Clifford's performance? And then also, what did you think about Will Levis and how he ran the ball?
Mm-hmm. Well, Levis always runs the ball well. At some point, you're going to want to see him throw. And, you know, I'm sure they probably would have without the situations there, but that's a package that needs to be expanded on. With Sean Clifford, I was interested to hear him say after the game that he thought he managed the game well. And you don't hear Sean Clifford say stuff like that.
That's true.
He actually acknowledged, hey, I was trying to do too many things. I was trying to do too much. I was trying, you know, these are plays I know I can make, and I just wasn't making them. So I think he felt like this was a game that situationally under those conditions that he had to, you know, dial himself back. So some of those rollouts, he looked good on. He was firing a little high. I think that seems to be one of his misses, maybe that high hard pass.
Yeah.
On Saturday, that was a tough catch. It led to his interception. But for him to be at this point, after what he's gone through, to be able to acknowledge that he could be a game manager and then rebuild back from there is an important step for him.
Yeah, there's another part to it, too. I mean, you do have to know who you're throwing to on a play like that.
Yeah.
Throwing high, with all due respect, throwing high to Isaac Lutz, it's not like throw. It's not like if you're throwing that ball to Mike, say Mike Gesicki in years gone by, that's actually right in the sweet spot. Isaac's not a tall receiver, and I think that was just one where he misjudged, in terms of where he threw it, but I think he also misjudged who he was throwing it to.
Yeah, and I think I saw a clip from yesterday with Mike Gesicki just going up, catching a ball probably about 3 feet above his head, and I don't know that, Sean just doesn't have that. I don't see that on his offense, and he knows that. But I think maybe the wind, too, probably had something to do with it in his mind that he's got to board these throws through the wind so they don't sail on him. So he's trying to get them on a rope. And, that kind of thing happens. But he didn't get out of – he got out of his own way, I think, was probably the most important thing.
When you had an opportunity – we always get a chance, we do, to talk to James and then two players. You have more of a wide range of people to talk to or hear from than we do when the game is over. Mm-hmm. So did you get a sense of where their confidence level is right now because they put together back-to-back performances like that?
It seems to be incrementally going up, especially with the defensive guys. One of the things that James Franklin said, and I think some of the defensive players echoed it, is this is the kind of game that we've, for James Franklin, this is the kind of game we played for 6 years. Those are like kind of the defensive plays that we've made. Mm-hmm. We got after plays, we chase guys down. There was a great play that Jason Owe made, chased a guy down on the sideline. I was watching that going, that's kind of what Micah used to do, and that was very noticeable to me because you didn't see that this year. There's no Micah on the field. But I thought that's the kind of play that we had seen. So them being able to put that together for 2 weeks in a row, the fourth down stops 2 weeks in a row, Brandon Smith making that fourth down play to basically force the throw away, Daquan Hardy, the blitz that he timed together there perfectly. I think you see them getting the wheels kind of moving back in that direction, that they feel like this is the way we know how to play.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why they don't, why it took this long. There's a lot of reasons that went into, the preparation time. But, if you get it for the next 2 weeks, who knows what you could do that, in late December in a potential bowl game.
Let me ask you about Juice Scruggs for a moment. Again, I'm following the ball, but there's certain things you can pick up on. Because late in the game, Caden Wallace was not out there. So Juice was playing right guard, and they had him out there with Will Fries. And, of course, when they've gone with the sixth offensive lineman, he's the sixth guy. What have you just seen when you can look at a replay, look at him live? What are you seeing that makes him into a potentially effective guy moving forward?
He's really athletic. He just seems like he moves really well for being a big lineman. Especially at guard, he seems like he gets out aggressive, good movement, good feet, that sort of thing. And I'm no way an offensive line expert whatsoever. And this kind of stuff I don't notice maybe first run through, but I looking at replays, like he's been very noticeable over the past month-ish. And honestly, for me personally, it's really good to see because he's a guy I interviewed in the preseason, way back in May, and he hadn't played football in basically 2 years.
I know.
Having gone through the whole last year with the rehab and stuff like that, and telling me stories about driving around campus on a scooter, and he's got a back brace, and he's very positive the whole time. But it will stick in the back of your mind: is this something that will end it? So for him to be, it's going to take time, I think, for him to get back into a place where he is, that full-on offensive lineman that they recruited. I remember, I think James Franklin said in that state title game when he was at Erie Cathedral Prep, but he was the best player on the field about 3 years ago, I guess it was now. So for him to be now move himself back into the rotation where he's that guy, and then next year potentially as a starter. He looks to me to be kind of fulfilling that what they saw of him in high school, definitely.
Also, there's another part. You know, anybody who's not around the team can make certain assumptions. What does it tell you about, after watching the last couple of weeks, about the continued buy-in by everybody that's going on? Because obviously the outside noise was not favorable to them.
That's exponentially bigger this year because of COVID.
Yeah.
That they've had to buy in, not just to, you know, every program's got to buy into the coach and coaching staff and administration, everything, into the word culture. Everybody's got their own sense of what they say to be culture. But this year, that had to be, it's even a bigger, you know, just a bigger factor, because now your culture is driving how you address protocols in virus prevention and protection and avoidance. And when you get to the point of where you're 0-5, I think, you know, it surprised me when those numbers come out every Wednesday that they just didn't start creeping up. I think
right.
Since 0-5, they've actually been creeping down.
Yes.
And again, that's an athletic, the full athletic department picture. But last week it was about 1,100 tests with according to Penn State, to positive test results.
Right.
Where you see, I mean, this is not even a daily occurrence in college basketball, football. I mean, it's hourly.
Right.
I just saw another email, you know, about 45 minutes ago, from Wisconsin Hockey, saying they've suspended basically for the rest of the 2020. I think their last four games of this year, calendar year, because of COVID and other injuries. So this is cross cutting everywhere, and for Penn State at 0-5, not to see numbers trickle up, and for practice not to be suspended. I think in the Big Ten East, they're the only program, as far as I know, that hasn't suspended, publicly suspended practice at some point since like August. I think every other program has done it at some point, and they haven't. That really points to buy-in, I think, from players as much as anything does.
Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much, my friend.
Yeah, thanks to you too, Steve.